Nema, when you first saw this video, what did you make of it?
Well, this was something that we've been hearing about for a while. In fact, about 3 years ago, I was in a detention center in Sicily, and we heard the most horrific story from an Ethiopian migrant. And even though he was on European soil, he was too scared to go on record. He was too scared to go on our cameras. But he described something that I almost found unbelievable, being locked into these warehouses, having people come round to choose from amongst the migrants, being beaten and forced to work. And at the time, I remember thinking, God, this sounds like something out of the, 17th century. This sounds like slavery.
So you'd heard all this, and then your reaction when you saw the video?
It sounds ridiculous for someone who puts words together for a living, but I found it undescribable. Like, I don't think I'll ever be able to genuinely do justice to what it felt like to watch that video, because your brain almost suspends disbelief. It just feels unbelievable. And it was just what I found so incredibly chilling was the casualness, the utter banality of the auctioneers and the way that they were almost, it was like horse traders. They were kind of geeing up the prices. Your brain almost won't allow you to process it as real life.
Then you went to do your own investigation in Libya. And can you tell us what you were able to go undercover and actually witness in the form of one of these slave sales?
So we were able to find someone who, at great, great risk, was willing to bring us along. So when we arrived, we were taken to the back of the yard outside of these warehouses where the people were being kept, and they were brought out. And what really struck me at the time was, first of all, how fast it all happened. Within minutes, it felt like these people had been sold. And then secondly, how they just kept going. That we walked in, we were strange women, they had no idea who we were, and yet they were so bizarrely comfortable about the fact that they were able to continue doing this, that they just kept going.
And these were, what you saw, were men from Niger. How many of them were sold in front of your eyes?
12. We confirmed that with the auctioneer himself.
And to what were they sold? What were they being sold to do?
It was a combination of things. So some of them were sold to operate farm machinery. There was this incredibly surreal moment where clearly the guy being sold was concerned about the ramifications of him being sold somewhere and being unable to do his job. So when the auctioneer said, I've got a driver, he kind of jumped up and said, no, I don't know how to drive. I'm a digger. I can operate digging machinery.
And the men themselves, how were they responding? I mean, were they resisting? Did they seem to have a voice in this at all?
No, they seemed very resigned. I think for a lot of them, they don't realize what awaits them. So they seem to believe that it is yet another step on their journey to Europe. Obviously, there's a lot of beatings. There is a lot of duress. But at the same time, I think ultimately they do believe that if I pay off this so-called debt to this smuggler, then I will be allowed to continue my journey to Europe. And then speaking to the people who'd actually been sold, you realize that actually often they're sold multiple times. So they're told that there's an initial debt, and that's why they have to be enslaved till that debt is paid off. But then a few of the men that we spoke to who had been former slaves said even after that so-called debt was paid off, they still were forced to pay a ransom, that their families were contacted. Mm-hmm. And one of them, Victory, the young man we spoke to in the piece, even after he'd been sold multiple times and then his family had paid off a ransom of about $3,000, still they didn't release him. And it was only when the anti-illegal immigration agency squads were able to go into these warehouses and free them that he was finally freed.
These are men who have been trying to escape from other places. Libya is, as we know, the port through which so many of the migrants and the refugees are trying to get across the Mediterranean, trying to get into Europe. How do they end up being owned by these merchants who are selling them?
Well, it's a combination of factors. So on one hand, you have The Italian government, for instance, is actually providing resources to Libyan factions to force a drop in the number of smugglers' boats that successfully make it to Europe. So there is a build-up of these migrants in these warehouses. So you have that issue where these migrants are sitting in the warehouses and the smugglers themselves can't actually guarantee that they'll reach Europe. So part of it is manufactured by the smugglers. This pretense that actually the trip is more expensive than it was initially. It's become more expensive. And so therefore, instead of you sitting in my warehouse and me having to pay to feed you and essentially look after you in whatever sense they claim to, you're going to go out and you're going to make money for me. And at the same time, now when you get to Tripoli and you don't have the money for the rest of your trip, the smugglers will tell the migrants that they are now property.
So what essentially, it would appear to be that the men who are being sold, they somehow believe it's their debt that's being sold and not them. But in fact, that's on top of being sold, that's not the case. They're not going to get anything back from it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. But in addition to the issue of the debt is also the issue that they have no means. There's no way for them to escape. There's no way for them to go back home. The men that we spoke to said that while they were being held in those warehouses, they were beaten every single day. And you see those scars that they showed us. So, you know, some of them may think that it is the debt that's being sold, but they also know that there is no other option. If they're told that they now have to go and work for that person, they have no alternative.
Did you get any sense of the scale of these kinds of sales?
That's very hard to get any sense of. It was all very anecdotal, but I think what was really telling for us was that we walked into that detention center, Tariqa Sikka, in Tripoli, and within about 5 minutes, we'd found 15, 20 men who said that they'd been sold.
The detention centers where the men who do escape, the ones who are then taken into custody because they're illegal, the pictures you have of them, the conditions are horrendous. It's just they're being piled in there and also warehoused there. The Libyan government does not want these people in the country. What are they saying about your investigation? You've sent tape over to them. You've told them what you found out. How are they responding to this?
Well, I think that, you know, there is the reality of the images and the fact that we were able to witness this ourselves. I genuinely believe that that puts them in a situation where they're having to acknowledge something that they'd rather not acknowledge. But at the same time, you know, they do make some very good points, which is the fact that Libya has become this front line. They are enforcing the borders into Europe. They are the ones who are policing those borders with very little resources. Libya itself is teetering on failed statehood. So while there is the reality of the Libyan authorities not being particularly proactive, I think there's also the issue of Europe not being particularly proactive, of the world. There is a level of complicity that doesn't just begin and end with the Libyan government.
Yeah, it's a very disturbing story, and I appreciate that you went in there and you got this tape. Thank you for speaking with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having us, Carol.